EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Leadership Podcast is a production of EMSradio.com. You can interact with us via email, emsleadership@gmail.com, or call us 303-720-6001.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast. And now here's your host, Chris Ceballero.
Well, once again, it's time for EMS Leadership. I want to thank you for joining us. And anytime you guys come and visit with us, it's always great. And we have a great show for you again. You know, one of the things that I was thinking earlier this week, you know, you have the employees that come in and it's shift bid time. And of course, when we have shift bid time, employees seem to lose their minds when it comes to seniority lists and when it comes to buddy bidding and when it comes to where they're going to be for the next year. And so, I mean, this is something that impacts them and impacts their family, impacts childcare, and it's something that they take very seriously. But it's amazing the folks that want to come in and they want to argue and they want to, really, they're kind of angry. And it kind of gets you angry inside as well. And it made me think about earlier in my career, I was one of those people that if you came in and you were angry with me, I kind of got angry with you back. And it was a lesson that one of the mentors that I had to grab me by the shoulders and shake me and say, if you're a leader, you've got to be above this. You've got to be the better person. You've got to be a leader when it's going good in your organization. You got to be a leader when it's going bad in your organization. And you've got to be the one to guide them away from this anger and kind of help them manage that. So it made me think this week, we've not done a show on anger management, and whether you're the leader that maybe has a short fuse and you've blown up at your employees, how do we handle that and how do we manage that? So we're going to discuss that today. So let's bring in our panel of regulars. The man who never gets mad at anybody is Don Lundy. Don, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Chris. How are you? And thanks for having me on the show. This is an awesome discussion to have because I remember coming up as a leader, nobody told me, hey, you really can't get angry. And I didn't understand that. So I think it's a great thing to be talking about.
Yeah, I don't know if we can consider you guys guests anymore. You guys just probably have to be co-hosts. I don't know. I mean, because we've kind of been doing this for a long time together. So, but I'm glad you're here. And getting your perspective on this is really going to be helpful, I think, for the folks that are out there. And I'm sure I'm going to take a lot of notes. And we go out to the West Coast, and is our resident Italian is Patrick Pianezza, a guy who never gets angry at anybody, right? As long as his hands are in his pockets, if his hands are free, I'm sure that the expletives are going to fly. But Patrick, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. You know, so when we think about this anger management, and I have to admit, you know, I was one of those leaders, and I grew up, my foundation's in the Air Force, and in the Air Force, we raise our voices, and in the Air Force, we're kind of poignant with our discussions, and we finger point, and we, you know, order people around, and, you know, when you left the military, that's not how the civilian world works, and I think first, I have to admit that as I grew into my leadership experience, I made a lot of those mistakes. And before we get into this discussion, guys, I want to ask you, as you transitioned into your leadership role, and Don, maybe we can start with you, did you have a challenge with this? I mean, as you mentioned, there wasn't a lot of education in this. I mean, did you have a challenge with it as you started off in your career?
I could tell a very short story and tell you the challenge that I had. When I first became director of my very first system, within about 3 months, we ended up firing a paramedic for what the medical director felt was an egregious error on a patient. We were not union at that time, but that was coming. We had a grievance hearing, and in this particular government, you could bring an attorney. There's a lot of grievance processes where you can't. And I can't even remember this gentleman's name, although we became friends eventually. But everybody said, oh, he's got this attorney. You just had no idea. And we met in the grievance committee, and he was just a nice guy, and I was a nice guy. And so, Don, you're up. And I start to tell the story, and 5 words into it, this guy interrupts me and says, listen, you're talking about the exact day. I don't think we need to get on the exact day. Let's just talk generalities. Oh, okay. Well, on or about, during the past 3 months, we've had this issue with blah. And he goes, well, I object to that also. I don't think you really need to do this. I just stay, and now I'm getting a little perturbed. The third time he interrupted me, I leaned across the table. I said, if you interrupt me one more time, I'm going to throw you out of this room. And at the same, you know, I'm in a public meeting where people are looking at me, and I realize, boy, I have lost it. And of course he bites right back. He's an attorney used to yelling. Okay. So the grievance, they break us up and we come back and we all try to stay calm. Not a week later, I meet this lawyer in the grocery store, and I'm kind of timid with him because he was a nasty guy. Smiles, he walks up, hey, Don. He says, you know, I hope you don't take any of that stuff personally. I was just doing my job. And he taught me more, I think, about my own anger and how, and of course, that day I called one of my mentors and I said, you won't believe what I did. And before I could finish, he told me what I did. And he said, this is a hard thing to get a hold of because we work as passionate practitioners. Now, when you're saving somebody's life and you yell, get the bag valve mask, that's being passionate. When you're working up a schedule and you go, hey, you doofus head, just get out of my office, that's called being rude. And it is not a fine line. It is a very definite line to, as you said, take one step above the ladder and to realize you can't get mad. And that doesn't mean you don't get disappointed or you don't raise your voice at times. But, you know, it is a difficult thing to realize the position that you're in now, that if you come in yelling, everybody's yelling within 10 minutes. If you come in angry, everybody's angry within 10 minutes. And you think your day was bad because the burnt toast was burnt. Wait until the whole office is as crabby as you are, and you're just going to have a miserable day. And at the end of the day, you won't figure out why. So, yeah, I would have to say there are no instructions on it. Your mentors that you talk to are going to be the best ones to say, tell me about anger. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of you were to have a mentor that goes, I'm still working on that, or I still really have an issue with that. Or, you know, this one time I blew up and I don't know why. You know, realizing it's there is half the issue, but it is difficult to realize that you're at a different level now.
So, Patrick, let me change that question for you a little bit. You know, we're the boss. You know, we're the leader. We've put our time in. You know, we've got 20-some-odd years, and now this kid's going to come in, and he's going to start arguing with me, and he's going to start questioning my authority. Don't I have a right here to be a little bit perturbed with this guy?
Absolutely, you do. But you understand, it's kind of like the old attorney saying, you're allowed to be as frustrated right up to the bridge of the guy's nose. And so you can get in a yelling and screaming match and be the alpha dog and, you know, show your plumage. And then you're going to have to realize that because you are supposed to be the guy in charge, that you're going to have to tuck that all in and eat that crow back because you have ostensibly destroyed your credit with those people. Now, there are people out there that are doing that just to get a rise out of you. And they're either pot stirrers or sometimes they're just people that are pitting those positions to get the reaction out of you. But my biggest mentor in that is find a cop that you can trust that has been a cop for a long time. And they were the first ones to teach me about that stuff. Piggybacking directly off of what Don said, you know, you can be having a conversation with the most hostile person ever. And if you keep a relatively low tone, they are going to start to calm down to match your tone just so they can hear what you're saying. Because if they're yelling and screaming and you're keeping this, you know, average volume of conversation, eventually they're going to start coming down to where you're at so they can, you know, so that way they're hearing your counterparts. Now, that doesn't always work, but as far as de-escalating the situation, my hats go off to police officers. They are by far and away some of the best trained at doing that I've ever seen, and I've learned a lot from them. And as to your other question about don't we have the right to do so, I would say, you know what? You're allowed to do whatever you want between your two ears. What happens on the outside, just like we always say for employees, I can hold you accountable for things that I can see. I can't hold you accountable for the things that you think. I can think all kinds of terrible things and smile at the same time.
You're doing it now, aren't you?
Just a little.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So let me ask you guys then, as far as the anger goes, I try to teach my folks the you know, the rules of EMS leadership. And rule number one is never allow your emotions to dictate your actions. Rule number two is don't waste time and energy on things you can't control, blah, blah, blah. So when we think about our emotions dictating our actions, how does that affect our credibility, Don, if we allow ourselves to get caught up in the minutiae and allow our emotions to dictate our actions to where maybe we've shown, you know, we've shown our backside on an issue and we've gotten angry with the workforce?
I think everybody in this business knows someone who, and I'll use the term, who has luggage with them, who has an amount of emotion or a drama in their life. And we've all had the people, some of them are friends and some coworkers and some both, who when they come in with this terrible story or wild story, many people in the circle will roll their eyes. And if they could voice it, they go, oh, the drama. Here's Billy again. He's got this drama. And those people that, you know, as wonderful as they are with their passion, more often than not make mistakes because they're walking too fast through the minutiae. They're not looking where they're going. There's not a logical workup to their decision making. And before you know it, they've made a mistake. So I think, you know, Patrick had it on the head. As a leader, I think I've spoken about this before. Most of the things you're going to talk about, whether it's a guy talking about a schedule change or partner's an idiot or he's having an affair or whatever, or she's having an affair. I mean, I'm not being sexist anyway, but whatever the issue is, most of these aren't 10-minute decisions. Most of these aren't quick decisions. Most of these are where you listen a lot. You take a lot of notes and you say, you know, that's pretty interesting. And more often than not, and Patrick's got a great idea about getting a cop that you know that's trustworthy because they deal with this every day. If you want to make the rocket go at 20,000 feet, you yell as loud as they do, and they yell as loud as you do, and pretty soon nobody's doing anything but yelling. If you continually work with whoever it is to keep your composure and say, okay, well, I don't blame you. That would upset me too. Now, tell me how we can get this resolved. You'll get more respect because they understand. They really will understand how crazy they were. Boy, I was out of control. Gosh, you know, my manager brought me down right out of nowhere. We often call it talking them off the cliff. Now some you can't do that to, and you know that's an anger issue that sometimes you have to deal with some training on them. I think it's more important that you learn and you get to some of the courses that are going to help you manage some of that anger. People know when I'm angry and I don't have to raise my voice. My pressure gives me away. I don't have hypertension. I'm chemically balanced. However, when I get angry, evidently I turn beet red. Evidently, and I've never looked in the mirror, but I can feel that I'm getting flush, and everybody knows, boy, he's angry, but I'll never raise my voice. I'm just sure one day I'm going to implode sitting in this chair and, you know, it's going to go all over the roof. But I think your credibility is not about how loud you can yell. You're right, Chris. I've been in the, I was a military policeman, and there's lots of yelling in the military policeman, but that's that world. This is a world of pretty educated folks, and even though they get angry and mad, sometimes you're the tree they hit. Sometimes you're the dog they yell at, and that's okay. I don't think it's any disrespect for them to yell at me. You know, they call my mother names or they use curse words. That's something entirely different. But if they're yelling because they're just frustrated, that's kind of what you're there for. And you can usually talk them back off the cliff and say, boy, I would be bad too. Golly, that's just, wow. So where do you think we ought to go with this? They just need somebody to listen to their frustration. You as a manager, you do that totally off-site, totally off-stage. You need a good partner in life or a close friend, or I still like your idea, a policeman that you know real well, someone that you can sit at out in the non-public eye and just give it to them. For the frustration that you're feeling, Jesus, is just crazy. But when you're on stage, act one, scene one, and action. You know your lines. You know what you need to do. You can't afford to get to that level. You can't, because you're going to make mistakes, and then, yeah, your credibility's shot.
Well, I don't know where we can go after that great explanation, Patrick. So let me ask you this. What do you think the big lesson for you was in your EMS leadership career that helped you get over the prospect of, I can't get angry, you know, I've got to allow my resolve to be the better of these situations?
You know, for me, I think it comes down to experience, because experience is one of those wonderful teachers that's out there. And the great thing about experience is, if you don't learn your lesson the first time, it will give you an opportunity to learn that lesson again and again. And for me, the most vivid memory from when I learned this lesson was dealing with an unfortunate incident with a very ill psychiatric patient who unfortunately was suffering from some quite serious delusions. And I know all of us in this career have dealt with patients like that. They are not they're not lucid. They're obviously not competent in what they're doing, but they can be potentially incredibly violent. And the problem was, this person presented normal as consciously oriented times three originally, and was slowly deteriorating. And I was not picking up on the subtleties off the back. I will freshly admit that I was green and fresh out of school and thought I was pretty good stuff. And this guy was arguing with me about getting on the stretcher, and I wasn't having it. So I started arguing back with him, and was really showing my backside, as opposed to, you know, being the professional we should be. When he started talking about, you know, beings that did not exist that were in the room, that was really our key in that, hey, something else is going on. And luckily, police just happened to be on the scene because they were familiar with this guy. And the short version of the story is, this guy became physically violent without any warning. It just happened. And I was lucky. There was, you know, police on scene that quite literally saved me from, you know, getting beat up. And they were able to not only, you know, professionally handle the situation as far as detain him and handcuff him to the stretcher so we could transport and treat. But once he was subdued, the officer completely jumped in with this man's delusions to a certain extent. I mean, not in a humorous fashion, but got him on his side and got him to realize that not what he had done was wrong, but was really making the situation better by using a lot of empathy and being able to at least relate to his reality. And to me, that was an incredible watershed learning moment for me, to realize that, you know, at the end of the day, we've got the opportunity to go home. And sometimes our patients don't have that that luxury. And so being able to stand up and yell and tell everybody that you're right and they're wrong, even if it's objectively true, like I've said on, I think, every podcast, what's going to be put on my tombstone is, we deal in perception. And for us, whether that perception is rooted in diehard objective reality or not, doesn't matter. We have to be able to match our patients or our coworkers and be able to be empathetic to their concerns and help de-escalate that situation, because that's far more important than being right.
And I think that that's the secret right there, is it's far more important to keep yourself in check than it is to you know, to be right. You know, Don Lundy uses a lot of those sayings that I've kind of picked up. And one of the things that I've used over the years, Don, and I don't recall, I don't know if you're going to recall this, but you'll say that the customer, you know, the old saying of the customer is always right. And you've come back to say the customer is not always right. But the customer is the customer.
That's correct. Always.
Right. And that just gives you a different perspective to say, you know, it's not personal. It's strictly business. And we've got to keep ourselves in that mindset that it's okay to just back up and say everything's going to be okay. So, but let me ask you this, Don. Let's stay with you here. If we think about, there are some steps that we can do when it comes to managing our anger. So with anything, you know, whether you're, you know, hooked on substances, whether you're, you know, doing things you shouldn't do in your life, the first thing is always admitting that there's a problem. How important is it to say to yourself, I have a problem with my anger and I may need to get some help for it?
Well, it's not only important, but it's sometimes it's real hard to see. I know that there are a friend of mine, I know that everybody listening can think of a friend of theirs who, it might not be anger. It might be that everything they say, or a lot of things they say, sound condescending, or a lot of things they say sound, they sound like they're so negative. I had a coworker that I worked with in South Carolina, one of the best intermediates. I would let him work on my family. And I told him that, and I said, you know, I've watched you work with patients. You are so awesome. I just can't eat lunch with you. And he says, well, why? I said, because you're so negative. And I think that goes with anger, too. You know, when people get so angry, sometimes they, because he didn't see it, and sometimes people don't see that. And I think acknowledging, you know, I probably do blow up more than I should or at the wrong time, I think that's half the battle. And I think anybody who wants to be a manager, now I'll tell something on me, and I bet every leader that's listening, a potential leader, if they're honest with themselves, they'll say this as well. Everybody goes into this knowing the answers. Everybody knows them. They just can't wait to get out there and do them. And in your life as a leader, you find out half the answers were spelled wrong and the other half you read wrong, and you start learning all over again. There's a few things you knew, but boy, as Rodney Dangerfield would say, there's a whole bunch of stuff you left out. And one of them is sometimes you have to acknowledge that there are things that push your buttons, and you need to know them to either know that you're going to get angry and step away or not. Talking about my mother, my mother's death, that's a hot button with me. Telling me that you're a very important person, using those words. I'm a VIP, you know, I'm a known person. That's kind of a button pusher for me. And I have to work hard to realize I can't get angry at this gentleman. He doesn't realize how condescending that sounds. And I think the other thing besides acknowledging that you've got a problem is realizing that no matter what someone is saying to you, most of the time, it's not personal. You are the manager that's trying to fix problems. And some of these problems infuriate the heck out of people. If you get angry with them and you don't acknowledge that you've got that problem, all you have is two people angry in the room and no answers to the issue. Somebody's got to be able to stay calm while the rest of the world's on fire and bring everybody back from the cliff. So I think acknowledging it's very important, and I think it's the hardest thing to do.
I have to agree. Now, I think one of the keys that you said in there is you have to know what those triggers are that allow that anger to raise. And it may sound really crazy, Patrick, and I want to ask your opinion on it. And you hear this a lot when it comes to leadership. How important is it, or what's your opinion on, do you think you need to keep a log of these things? You know, every time I see this employee when he comes in, he's got this negative attitude. He just rubs me the wrong way. But how important is it to keep a log of those things that maybe make you angry?
You know, I look at it, to me it sounds like fortune cookie wisdom, but I think there's value in it. And without sounding like Dr. Phil, I think it depends on how severe your anger management is. I mean, if you're to the point where people are constantly coming up to you and going, you've got an issue here, like this is not normal human behavior, you're flying off the handle, then I think it would be a good idea to start keeping this. Or even if you suspect you're having an issue, then I think this is a good idea. Just like if you're trying to start a new workout regimen or dieting, you have to document what you're currently eating so you know what to change. I think it's a good idea, and I don't see any shame in it. I think with something like whenever we're told to write things down to keep a log of our daily behaviors can be quite, can feel kind of demeaning, and I don't know how to placate that. There's really no answer and for that. But the reality is that that will give you a much better objective view of how often is this happening to me. And you might realize in reality that, yeah, you know what, I didn't realize I was getting this upset this often. I don't know that I would do it for an extensively long period of time. Like if you've got a whole year's worth of hostility logs, I'd say that, you know, you have you're a little OCD as well. But I think it's a good step to have. And like Don was saying about acknowledging that you've got a problem, sometimes people don't know they have a problem. And I think that's where the courage comes in as leadership, is what you ignore, what you permit, you absolutely promote. And so you have to have the courage and the confidence to have those conversations with those employees that are giving you a problem, to say, hey, if you have an EAP system, yeah, an employee assistance program, it's not good enough to be, you can't be subtle about things like that. It's a, hey, listen, I don't know why your behavior is like this, but I've noticed that it's changed. I'm requiring you to go to this program. What you do in this program is completely confidential. It's none of my business. I don't know anything about it. I will never know. But I will know if you attend, and I'm making this an absolute requirement for you by, you know, the end of the month, or however your HR system depends, or how your HR system sets that up. But I think a lot of people may be walking around with, they don't necessarily know they're being, that they have this problem. And it might be something temporary, and it might be something that they have deep-seated issues. Remember, your job is not to be the psychiatrist or the psychologist. You're not going to cure them. That's not your job. As the leader, it's figuring out that this person has some has an issue, or is being destructive, and guiding them towards something that is beneficial to them. And if that means that you have to keep a log, or they have to keep a log, that's definitely a good step in the right direction.
Very good stuff. So let me say this first off, for everyone that's listening. And I've done a little bit of, I've got a couple classes that I've done on emotional intelligence, and that's one of the classes that I really enjoy teaching. And everybody needs to know that when you're angry, that's a normal response. And if you're not familiar with the pathophysiology of how that works, or the physiology of how that works, everything that we do is based on electrical impulses. And it comes in, you know, whether it's our sight, whether it's our sense of smell, it all makes electrical impulses. And that's what kind of guides us into, you know, what's going on around us. Well, as these electrical impulses go through the brain, it hits the limbic system. And the limbic system is what causes our flight or fight response. And this is what makes our breathing quicker. And this is what really gets us into that, you know, kind of that irate state. And you always hear them say, you know, take 10 deep breaths. And the reason they say to do that is because that's when that impulse finally hits the frontal lobe where the reasoning is. So our normal process is to kind of get a little red, is to kind of get a little upset, but it's how we manage that until we get to the reasoning part of our brain to say that, all right, it's not as bad as we seem to think it is. So with that said, Don, how important is it, you know, when you identify these things, that you have a good support structure in place, or that you have a good mentor in place, that you're able to kind of bounce what's happened off of and maybe kind of get their experiences in this?
This is extremely important. And I think one of the best mentors, you know, when we use that word, we commonly think of somebody in the professional world that we've walked with and learned from. I can tell you that one of my strongest mentors is my wife and my son. They both have, you know, lived with me all those years that I was going through this process, and they were the ones that were very honest. And you know, I'd tell them this story, and you know, Robert, even 12 and 13, he'd say, "Dad, you did real well on that." And one time he looked and says, "So you lost it, huh?" And he wasn't being mean or nasty or anything. He was saying what was true. I always feel bad for people who have nobody in their life that they can sit down with, and whether those people understand it or not, they'll listen to it, and they won't push it off. They won't say, "I don't want to listen to what your day was like the other day." I feel so bad for them, because both of them are missing out on a tremendous opportunity to learn from each other. But certainly in the professional world, you need at least one, and probably two different people that you can call and say, "I got this issue going on, and the other day I lost it, and I yelled at this person, and because he said this, and you know, what do you think?" And I think Patrick's right. You're not the chaplain. You're the mentor, and you'd say, "Well, you know, I would have probably gotten mad, but." Tell me what you resolved. How did you get it resolved? 9 times out of 10, if they lost it and they got it resolved, it was like pulling teeth. Everybody's exhausted at the end of the day, and that's not how it should be. But your mentor can generally, one, they'll be honest with you and say, "You know, you do get kind of teed off when that happens." I was telling you about somebody saying, "You know, I'm a known person." One of my coworkers came in when they said, "By the way, you know, that's a red button issue." "No, it's not." And I looked at her and I said, "No, it's not." She goes, "Well, it is. You're going to admit it one day." And she was right. And it is. I know it. I think it's real important. It's like having a mirror. Combing your hair without a mirror is okay, but you look like you combed your head without a mirror. And then at the end of the day, you don't look that good. I think without that mirror of somebody that can be honest with you, and you don't get mad at them because you know they're being, if you're going to get mad, if you ask them a question and they tell you what you asked and they get mad because of it, you're not going to have many mentors around, because that's, you're not asking them for your opinion, you're asking them for theirs. So you have to be ready for that honesty, and they're going to ask probably for honesty as well. I think without that, you're swimming without a compass. You don't know which way you're going. You're just treading water.
You know, Don, and just for a point of order, I don't know if you know this, but I've heard Patrick say he's a very important person. But we'll deal with that at another time. So,
well, he is a very important person.
Do you not know who I am?
That's right. So Patrick, you know, we've all been in these situations, and we've all kind of had to figure out a way to kind of diffuse ourselves. And one of the things that I think is important is to kind of interrupt those passionate moments. You know, if we feel ourselves getting angry, or if we feel ourselves, you know, kind of getting ready to lash back, how important is it to kind of interrupt those anger cycles, you know, to kind of tell yourself, all right, you know, you're getting upset, just stop it. Just take 10 deep breaths, or just walk away and come back. Does that help at all?
I think it does. When you do it the right way, you have to be careful, and in my experience at least, because as we've mentioned at the early part of the show, I obviously have never gotten angry at anyone. You have to be able to stop that cycle that kind of feeds itself. And so you're angry, and then you're thinking about it, and you're like, oh, I'm angry because, you know, Chris said this. God, that aggravates me. And if he would just shut up, I kind of want to punch him in the face. When you start realizing that you're going down the path of you're really wanting to do this person harm, you have to kind of clear your mind. And it's not easy, because we've all been to that point where we're so angry, where we're vibrating, and you know it's only going to take one more straw to break the camel's back. The reality of the situation, what comes with experience, is realizing that you're at that brink and being able to not necessarily calm down. I'm not saying take your heart rate down from 200 back to 60 and sing Kumbaya, but have that moment of realization that you know that you're getting close to that point. And simply in your own mind, and I'm saying this as literally as I can, because this is something I've done before, is yell stop in your head as loud as you can. And you will be amazed that when you've done this, how fast everything clears out. Or especially for those of us that are in EMS, and I'm telling you, this isn't a reference that I'm looking at now, but I've done this multiple times when I've gotten to the point where I thought I was going to snap, is yell clear inside your head. And all of a sudden, if you've been in EMS for any period of time, you know what that means. You jump back, and all of a sudden everything refocuses. And that has worked really well. The deep breathing thing also works well. It stimulates your vagus nerve. It brings down your heart rate. But you have to be really careful, because if you're just sitting there going, you're not helping anybody. Make sure that you're taking some deep breaths. Don't hold your breath, obviously. But also realize that there's some things, some manifestations of the pathophysiology that you can't control. The flushing, that's going to happen if you're aggravated. That fight or flight syndrome is going to kick in. When that adrenaline starts pumping, there are certain physical manifestations you're not going to be able to control. But like you were saying, in the prefrontal cortex, where all of the cognition occurs and that reasoning occurs, that's where you have to be the bigger person and realize that some of the things that you're talking about aren't as important as you think they are. There's something I like that says, you know, count to 20 before you respond, and all these other things. I don't like to put a magic number on it. I'm certainly not going to argue with, you know, PhDs and scholars that have come up with this, but it really shows your character if you can compose a coherent response that doesn't contain venom. And however long that takes, I mean, you can use that time as a dramatic pause. But you really need to be able to think things through before you start saying things that are going to potentially cause you to eat your words or be terminated. And whatever that process is for you, I mean, the deep breathing thing, count to 20, laugh at yourself if you have to. Think about the actual points in the argument that are aggravating and try rephrasing them. Oftentimes, and I've had this experience with people because I happen to be bilingual, is you hear people oftentimes in other languages, Americans tend to use loud, slow English at people, and it doesn't work. And they get frustrated, so they get even louder, and they speak a little slower, and it starts getting very, very demeaning very quickly. Sometimes it just takes a second to be able to kind of you almost have to take yourself away, chuckle at it, and start fresh. And I'm not saying it's easy. It's not. But sometimes that simple distraction of realizing how cartoonish this might look from the outside might be enough to get your brain back in the driver's seat as opposed to being the backseat driver.
You know, that's a very interesting thing that you brought up. And Don, let me ask your opinion about that. Patrick says that, thinking about the situation and kind of laughing at yourself for kind of make the joke of the fact with yourself that you're allowing yourself to get angry, because we've all done that with other people. We've all seen that, right? We've all seen people get fired up and we've all kind of snickered at them like, you know, what's going on with this guy? But there has to be benefit to looking at the situation and just kind of laughing, you know, find the humor in this anger within yourself to say, you know, this isn't really a big deal.
I can tell you, and I think you've heard me say this, not taking yourself too seriously is probably one of the best things you can do to keep yourself from imploding. I've heard people say, well, I was getting angry at this issue so much that blood was shooting from my eyes. Well, you know, as sick a mind as all of us have in EMS, when we hear that, that's kind of a funny line. Blood shooting from his eyes. Boy, you know, I can imagine that. That's pretty funny. But in fact, anything that can make you chuckle for a minute and look in the mirror and say, what in the, you know, you are getting really silly in this thing. I think laughter is some of the best medicine to humble ourselves, to let us back up. And I can't remember the term that Patrick used, but he was right. Clear. And I like that, you know, clear, everybody stops for a minute. I being the music side that I am, I'll always, once in a while in my head, I'll say, stop. Reset, and it gets my brain off that, you know, off the fire, and then I look at it for a minute, and usually I'll laugh, and if somebody's really angry, what are you laughing at? And I'll say, well, I'm laughing at me. Boy, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get all cranked up with that issue. It, you know, you're really upset with it, and I need to help you instead of just joining the bandwagon. Or sometimes to myself, I'll say, well, okay, I got that out. Now let's get back to script and keep going. And I think it is important, again, you know, to look in the mirror and once in a while to stop and kind of chuckle and say, you know, we look like madmen. I look like a madman. And it's okay, because like you said, we have all been there. And the sooner we realize that we're not the king, we're just another guy that they've allowed to be a leader of an organization. We're not the king of Siam. We're somebody trying to do the best to do what we got. And sometimes we'll just tilt our head and say, well, boy, that got me. I didn't think I could get mad about that, but boy, that really got me. And I'm not going to let that happen again.
Yeah, remember, it's good to be the king. I heard that in a movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me go ahead and take a quick break so we can hear from EMS manager. And Patrick, when I come back, I want to talk about, is building trust part of this process of managing your anger? So we'll be back with you on the other side of the break, and we'll hear from Patrick on building trust. This episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast is being sponsored by EMS Manager. You know, I just got to tell you, man, I love EMS Manager, and you have to try out this software for yourself. It takes the chore out of employee scheduling and management of the EMS providers and makes it easy. It's easy to set up, it's easy to maintain, and it's easy to manage. And what's really great about it is there's a mobile web device, and it's accessible from any smartphone or other mobile devices. And with an easy-to-use web interface, viewable from anywhere on the World Wide Web, managers and staff can oversee, manage, and make requests or changes to employee schedules from anywhere. The pricing is based on the size of your organization, so it's always affordable because it's web-based. Your employee schedule and software is located in the cloud. This means no additional local IT costs to worry about. And there's always free training, free tech support, and free system software upgrades. If you want this for your system, check out the free customizable trial of EMS Manager at emsmanager.net, or just go ahead and go to our webpage and go ahead and hit the link. It's going to take you right to it, and go ahead and download a free trial. I want to thank EMS Manager for sponsoring the EMS Leadership Podcast, as well as many of the other favorite EMS programs from ProMed Network. EMS Manager is proud to support EMS providers and managers through this sponsorship and the support of what we do. Go ahead and show them your support and take a few minutes to check out the free trial at emsmanager.net, or go ahead and download it from our webpage. That's Aladtech's EMS Manager for online employee scheduling and workforce management. Visit emsmanager.net for your free customized trial of this amazing employee scheduling management tool. That's emsmanager.net, or go ahead and download it from our webpage. Let's go ahead and get back to the show. Well, welcome back, everyone, and we're talking about anger management. And, you know, again, one of the things that we all need to try to control, and we've all probably let it get the better of us throughout our careers. So one of the things we talked about before we went and heard from EMS Manager Patrick was building trust. And, you know, we kind of have that cynical aspect of leadership. And we think that those people that know how to push our buttons are there to do it on purpose. They're aggravating us on purpose. They're annoying us on purpose. So when we think about building trust with those individuals to say, you know what, maybe that's not what they're trying to do. How important is that component to us learning how to manage our anger?
I think that whenever you're graced with an opportunity to harness your new skill and make it better, the better off you, the better leader you become. And I need to pull away and say, you know, I would argue that a large, substantial majority of your employees are not coming to work with the sole goal to upset you. Do I think that happens realistically? Yeah, I think it does. I think there are moments where I think there's people that you work with day in and day out that you just, it would be a nice day if they called out sick today. But the reality is, because you're a leader, you have to deal with these situations. But I think you need to take yourself out of it. And building trust with those types of people, the pot stirrers, the ones that you don't necessarily like engaging with, and they know that, that's where the hindrance is. The more that you can handle them and they start to realize that they're not effective in their ability to get a razz out of you anymore, they start to build trust, not just in you, but in the system in which they work, because they're starting to realize that these childish, you know, playground antics aren't going to work anymore. And that's really going to elevate your ability to handle situations at a leadership level. Now, I certainly am not saying it's easy at all, but being able to not diffuse it, but just kind of listen to them and realize that they may be coming in with an intention to get you upset, but not letting them win is a better alternative than giving them the satisfaction of giving in. And again, I'm certainly not coming from a place of saying that that's an easy task, but it's something you're going to have to work with through the rest of your career. It's not something that you're going to, you know, magically harness today, and it's never going to happen to you tomorrow. But the more experience you get with this, the better off you're going to be successful in the future.
I like that. That's a great explanation to building trust. You know, one of the things, Don, that I've found in my processes of getting angry, and we do it in our relationships with our spouses as well, is, and we've talked about the most important skill that I think we need to have as leaders is listening effectively. But how many times have we misconstrued or misunderstood what somebody was trying to say, and that just kind of set us right off? So when we think about effectively listening, or our listening skills, we got to be able to do that to ensure that we don't allow our emotions to dictate our actions, don't we?
I think we do. And I think if we remember back, and this is one of the times that our patient care tactics that we have help our leadership tactics. It's not a lot of times that'll help, but this is one in which when you go to the blazing drunk who is calling you all sorts of names and talking about nasty things about you and just really horrible stuff. If you're a true professional, you realize he's not doing this to you. You just happen to be standing there. It doesn't matter who it is. It's not personal. He's angry at his situation. He's angry because he's got chemicals on board. It's not you personally. And all of us professionally are able to roll that off our back and realize that that's not the deal. It's amazing in a leadership role how sometimes we won't do that. We don't realize that, you know, this is not about you. It's about them. They're angry about something. And if you get angry about something, it's about you. It's not about them, and it's not about the issue. All of a sudden, solving whatever the issue might be, or at least acknowledging that it's there, becomes a second and third and fourth hand deal. And it's all about your anger or their anger that get in the way. So I think if we take what we know in the field, that being that when the patient says they love us, or the patient says you're really great, or you're really lousy, or I hate your guts, and it's all relative to who you are and who they are. You don't take that as gospel because you don't know them that way. You know, you're helping them at that time and certainly say, I love you. Well, you know, sure they do at that moment, but it's not in the same context. And the same thing goes for anger. It's, we do that in the field. We should do that as leaders as well, to say, well, as they're explaining this to me and the words are kind of going by, we need to pick up on the words that are going to solve the issue, not the words that are going to make us mad. We need to peg those words and peg those issues and get them back into focus, because if they're angry and you're angry, you've lost the focus. You've lost the whole idea of the issue. Anger, while it makes us feel good, and unless you're hypertensive, eventually makes us lose the argument because we forgot what the hell the argument was about. We've got to get our focus back on the issue at hand. And if somebody's yelling at us, we've got to get their focus back on the issue at hand.
You know, one of the things that, and I think this is going to be the last thing that we touch on, and I'll start off with you, Patrick, before we get to closing thoughts, is we seem to hold a grudge against the people who have really angered us or who have really just, you know, annoyed us constantly. And we see them coming and it just automatically, you know, gets us upset. Do we really need to get to a point where we just need to let that stuff go and just forgive and forget?
Absolutely. And you're dead on. It's not easy. I'd love to be able to stand up and say, I cherish everyone on this earth the exact same, regardless of anything. And it's simply not true. And of course, with Chris and I suffering from the genetic condition of being Italian, it's tough to let a grudge go. But the reality is, the more you hold on to it, the more power it has over you. And I know that's a little esoteric, but the reality is, you have to assume that your employees, the people that you deal with, the public, aren't attacking you like Don said. They're having an issue. They are having a crisis that is very, very real to them. And like I said before, it doesn't have to be objectively true. It just has to be something that they're impassioned about. And once that issue's done, it's done. It's cleared. And if it keeps coming up, you have to figure out a way to work it. But you can't get to a point where every time you see this person, you associate them with a negative outcome, because then you're doing not only yourself a disservice, you're doing them a disservice, and you'll never actually hear what's really going on. You'll just automatically start. You'll train yourself to believe that, you know, if they're always talking about overtime, that's all you're ever going to hear, and you might be missing something incredibly important because you're in your mind. You've already clicked off the recording device, and you already telling yourself, "Yep, it's you know, it's Don, and he's talking about wanting overtime again, or and I can't do it, and I'm sick and tired of dealing with it." And so Don is actually telling you that he's got to leave because a family member's sick, and it's happened. There's been multiple instances that people aren't listening because they already expect to be hearing something. What you expect to hear is what you're going to hear. You have to be able to let whatever has let you go, or whatever has really ticked you off, let go. And that can be done with, you know, a phone call to a good friend, a spouse, a girlfriend, whatever, somebody that you trust, and just say, you know, someplace where you can unwind. It's confidential. You know, it's not going to go anywhere. And just say, I can't. This guy or girl is driving me absolutely nuts. And what I find to be very beneficial is asking, you know, am I wrong in this just, you know, driving me absolutely insane? And sometimes they'll say, yeah, you're being an ass. You need to, you know, reel it in. Or no, you're right. This would drive me absolutely nuts. And, you know, sometimes you come to the conclusion that person needs to get, you know, his head rearranged back on top of his shoulders. But the reality of the situation is, you have to be the bigger person. And like I said, it's not easy, but you have to be able to pull away from that and be the better leader, because you are the example that's being set to your staff. Because if they feel like all they do, if you feel like all everybody does is complain to you, you're probably right. You've probably built that system up, and you need to be able to have open communication. And you can't do that if every time you see that same employee, all you're assuming is that it's going to be bad news.
I have to agree. And then just a question I have is that if they're putting their head back on their shoulders, where was it in the first place? Maybe we'll save that for another show. But, you know, so Don, we covered a lot of things tonight. You know, we've all been here and we've all shown our butts a couple times when we shouldn't have done that. So if we think about our closing thoughts, if you have any pearls of wisdom for our listeners out there, how do you guide them?
I'll tell you, and I've said this over and over again, but it's really worth repeating. The true strongest words you can use to any employee that you lose it with, and I'll give you an example. You're on the way up the stairs to the living quarters, and unbeknownst to them, you're coming up the stairs. They're griping about something. Who knows what it is, but it's something that you did the other day. Some operational issue you're doing the other day. Boy, he was an idiot. Didn't know what he was doing. And you decide to come around the corner and just lay into that employee. What the hell do you think you're doing? Talking like that about the, you want to know what trouble is? I'll give you one. And by the time you're done, all the bricks are loose in the building and nobody can hear anymore. And you leave and realize, you know, hopefully either through one of your mentors or you that, you know, well, boy, he pushed that button. He sure did. He got me and I just lost it. What was I thinking? The most important thing you do is not over the telephone, not via email, not Twitter, not Facebook. You go and find that employee the next day they work and you go up and say, hey, you remember the other day, right? I'm sorry. I really did lose it for a minute. I got mad and I probably shouldn't have. And so tell me again. I know you were frustrated about something I was doing. I really do want to hear about it. Two things will happen. One, you'll see yourself in the mirror like you've never seen yourself before. The other thing will happen is you'll get a great amount of respect from somebody that realizes there really is no place in the professional world to treat people like children. There is no place for it. And you know, okay, there are people listening out there and say, well, I remember a time that happened and he really deserved it. Well, really? So you solved the whole problem because of that? Really what you did is you made yourself feel good for about 3 minutes and you solved nothing. Those two words, I'm sorry, shows that number one, you're not the king of Siam. It's not always good to be king. Sometimes the king makes mistakes. And the best thing you can do as a leader is admit that and say, you know, we all goof up and I sure did. And I'm sorry. I want to listen to that again. I want to make sure there's something I can make because our job is not to, you know, allow them to work and say, you should be thankful for the job that you have. Well, maybe in the 40s that was it. But your job is to be their team leader, and you can't be their team leader while you got a bat in your hand, hitting your other hand with it, saying, really? Really? You want to say that? And showing your anger. You've got to be at the 50,000-foot level. You've got to be the one that they go, I'm so mad about this. He'll be calm. He'll give me a view. Let me go talk to him.
And closing thoughts, Patrick Pianetta.
You know, I think this is an incredibly large topic that we could talk on for multiple hours. And I hope we do a little bit of service to it. But I think what I would take away from this is getting angry is part of being human. We can't turn it off. It's a natural reaction. I think we talked a little bit about pathophysiology in it and the fact that we're wired to fight or flight. It's part of the human condition. But what makes us different is the ability to regulate the outcomes on the outside. That's why we've said before, I can hold you accountable for the things that you do, not the things that you think. But being able to at least corral the thoughts in a meaningful way to keep you from losing that anger or that edge is really important. And I think some of the tips that we talked throughout the show are really important. Don tied a lovely bow on it, and I think he's absolutely right. Being able to, if you do lose it and you've got to show up the next day, you've got to apologize and you've got to do it in person. You know, it could be that maybe you were right, maybe they were right. Like I've said before, that doesn't matter. You've just got to own it and say, hey, look, I want to help. You know, I want you to help me out and make sure that never happens again. And if you see that happening, I want you to call me out on it. And that's going to build a lot more trust within the organization and with the leadership. And you know, be frank with your boss. Like I tell everybody's got a boss. And your boss needs to know when you've done good and when you've done bad, because the last thing that your boss needs to know or hear about it secondhand. And so even if that's a board member, if it's the CEO, if it's, you know, whoever that is in your system, call them, let them know, hey, listen, I flew off the handle and it was more than just elevating my volume to get a point across. It was something that was inappropriate. I shouldn't have done it. And I want to let you know before you hear about it from somebody else. A part of that building trust goes two ways, because you do not look good if all you do is tell your boss good things about you. They need to know the full picture, and you'll get much more trust back as long as you're open and transparent with that stuff too. And I think those would be that's the way I would end this, and just say there's a lot of research out here on anger management. Do a Google search. If you think you have a problem, or if you know somebody who has a problem, follow your appropriate HR processes. If you have an EAP system, please use it. They're wonderful things, and make the recommendations appropriately.
Yeah, that's really good stuff. I mean, for me, rule number one is never allow your emotions to dictate your actions. You have to remember, you know, you're the leader of the organization. You're the supervisor. You're the crew chief, and you've got to be the one that has the resolve. You've got to be the one that allows your experience to take you through those situations. And, you know, if there's frustrations and if there's things that annoy you and if there's things that just tick you off to the point where you start to raise your voice or you start to feel your blood pressure raise or whatever those things are, you know, find a way to work those things out. Because in the long run, for your health, for the health of your leadership abilities, for the health of your employees, that's never going to work. And I'm here to tell you, folks, from experience, you know, if there's anything that I can share with you that you take away from, you know, this show that we do is, you know, allowing your emotions to dictate your actions will kill your leadership credibility quicker than it took you to build that leadership credibility up. And as you try to rehabilitate that, once you've lost that trust, or once you've angered or yelled at your employees or treated them disrespectfully, I don't know that you ever get it back. I mean, we've tried to give you some tools to say, you know, this is the way to build that trust back. But I got to tell you, my feeling is in the eyes of your employees, I don't know that you ever really get it back. But hopefully we've given you some great tips. If you are a person that has some challenges with anger, go ahead and, you know, see if you can find some resources to assist. If you know somebody that has some challenges, maybe you just let them listen to the podcast and see if that helps them out any. But, you know, for Don Lundy, for Patrick Pianezza, I want to thank you for joining us. I want to know your thoughts, so go ahead and email the show at emsleadership@gmail.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do that at Chief of EMS. And don't forget the Facebook page. Go on over to Facebook and become a fan. And until next week, this is Chris Sabalero, and I'll chat with you guys again real soon. Have a great night.